Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by this morning. It is Bullies to Buddies Day. And the chapter we're on now is kind of, I don't know, pulls together a little bit about the first part of the book. It's an actual proposal for a rational, moral policy to be established in schools. And what I like about this is that it's like not a big deal. It's not so much about policing and intervening and all the things that go with everything else we try to do when we try to keep any group of people working well together, not having different opinions and having it come to arguments and all of the things that we know will happen. It's about working on individuals and establishing what we're supposed to establish at a very early age, which is morality. It's about knowing what's right and wrong, because you know that the wrong things you don't want done to yourself. You want the right things done to you, about you, for you. So if you're going to live a lifestyle that teaches others and promotes that kind of activity in your own life, that's who you are. You are moral, rational, try to be, even though I realize that this isn't so easy because something clicks in our heads and sets off the emotion of judgment, especially if somebody's different from you or believes differently than you. All of those things I get. But morally speaking, if you think about the fact that you're different from them, and if they're accepting of you, then that should work together. You should feel the same way about them, and vice versa. You see, it's one of those kind of things that are kind of contagious, and it's nice when we talk about contagion and we're not talking about spinal meningitis and smallpox. We're talking about good behavior. We're talking about good morals. We're talking about rational decisions, ones that are not based on all the bad things that we seem to hang on to, like the judgmentality, like the slanderous comments that people make about other people, whether they really know what's going on or not. So we're going to go over this chapter today together, and I would like I'd like to remind you all some of the stories that we've talked about recently. And I want you to think about how these messages that Izzy has written in this chapter would have helped the different stories and would still help some of the stories that we've talked about recently. Edward Snowden. Everybody judged him, right or wrong, because they went by what they heard in the media and made decisions. I myself have been very torn about whether he's got a black hat on or a white hat on. The problem going on with our friend Carrie, who made a mistake, one that's been made by millions before her, and lost her child because of the fact that she got no real guidance or no real empathy from anyone. It just became a business. So everything that we talk about, even when we go back to the story of the young man who killed his mom, all the students, the teachers, and then took his own life, that went on for a long time. And if there had been some rational, moral behavior in his own family, that might have been stopped. That might have been curtailed. He might have gotten the help that he needed. So let's bring in Shell. We'll talk about this a little bit, and then we'll discuss what Izzy has put in this chapter to help guide us a little bit. Good morning, honey.
Good morning, Rainey. How are you doing, sweetie?
I'm good. I'm sitting here looking outside and thinking to myself, it might be beautiful out, but my office window is so dirty from all the rain, I can't tell whether it's good or bad out.
Well, there you go. It's a little overcast.
I like
the wild weather. I don't mind it so much. I don't like it when it's overcast and still outside, but I love it when it's cast and the wind is blowing. The other day, the wind was whipping around so much, it almost looked like the kind of winds that precede when we have hurricanes here. I mean, a couple of my trees were really bending. It was, like, exhilarating. I love it. But
I like that, too. I enjoy that kind of weather as well, even when I was really little. So, but I think that's why. I think the exhilaration of seeing it's like the whole earth is moving for you.
Yeah,
I mean, because if I look out the window right now, everything's very, very still.
Yeah, when I went to the beach, we talk about that a lot on the show, and the wind was whipping around, and the waves were coming in, and I'm seeing the water, and I'm smelling the air. You know, it's like
mm-hmm,
all
the salt.
Like, the sea salt and all that, and you can, like, actually smell it. And it's so therapeutic, you know, for people that don't do that. It really is something that's very, very therapeutic. The air is just different at the beach, even if you don't go in the water, because I didn't go in the water, you know, but just the sounds, and to be that close to nature, it really can uplift you.
Well, you know, I think there's something there that we need to just briefly say. If you go to the beach here, we used to go to Deerfield Beach and Pompano Beach when we lived further south all the time. And up here in West Palm also has a beautiful beach right out here. And Lake Worth has an awesome beach as well. But if you take note, you see young people and you see retired older people. Both sets of people get what they get from the beach. It's when you're in the middle that you forget about what it offers you.
It's
when you get into your late 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s. You're busy with work, you're busy with this, you're busy with that, and you forget that it's sitting right there waiting to make you feel better. And except for parking, it's free. But it always tickles me because I think to myself, see, kids get it, and us old farts get it. It's the ones in between that forget about it, you know, the ones in between. So I think you heard most of what I said this morning. And
I missed the first you made.
It's Izzy's proposal for a rational, moral school bullying policy. And, of course, it's based on the golden rule. But
what really, again, and
I feel like I have to say this every time we open a new chapter, is how much it pertains to everything else that we talk about, even Edward Snowden, Kerry, all the mass harm that's been done to kids and all the other stuff that's going on, even the story that we talked about last week with the couple, the two ladies, and the attempt to take the life, well, she succeeded in taking the life of the two-year-old little girl, but the attempt at taking her own life and the 10-year-old's life. All of this has to do with rational, moral thoughts, all of it. And I, you know, everything we read in this book, and I know you agree because we've talked about it, it so pertains to every aspect, especially the trauma and the drama that we talk about. It really pertains to all that.
I mean, you're talking about the woman with like you said, with a little two-year-old girl and then herself and a boy. that entire act happened out of a need to get revenge.
Yep.
So, I mean, now this had catastrophic, this had a catastrophic outcome, but how many people every single day in relationships seek revenge against their significant other because they want a divorce, they want to break up, they want to move on, or they're still together, but the person did something they didn't like, and instead of dealing with it compassionately and trying to find out, you know, why this other thing was done, they seek to up the ante and they go for revenge, and it becomes physical, or sometimes it just becomes verbally harmful, where they start Facebooking about each other, and you do, you know, this particular one turned into an irreversible violent act of murder. But how many times throughout any given day is somebody going there and really just ruining another person's life with lies and spitefulness, but from the same place, from that same place of wanting to get revenge for something? It's just an awful emotion.
Well, And at the end of the day, if almost everything, like we even Carrie, the situation now, what Carrie is going through is she's being slandered on social websites and in her personal life, and people are passing judgment on her. And I want to look at everybody and say, you know, we all, I hate to use this analogy, but it's true, we all have dirty underwear, every one of us. It's like a part of living. The dirty underwear part of our lives is a part of life. And you are never above reproach. You are never above scrutiny for those who think it's their place, their job, and their privilege to do so. For me, I always feel like the less I do to somebody else, the less will get done to me.
Right.
I don't know if that's true exactly, because I've never measured, but it seems like it would be.
Well, one thing that we can say about Carrie, and this would go for anybody that's in her situation, anytime you have somebody trying to bring light to a particular situation, regardless of their mistakes or anything like that, she's trying to bring light to inappropriate and unethical behavior by this company. Anytime you try to bring light to something that might be considered controversial, you're going to attract bugs. It's just the situation. You know, you flip your light out in front of your house, and all of a sudden you got all kinds of little moths and stuff going there.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, Shel.
The light attracts bugs, and it's like, so it doesn't mean that you don't flip the light on, but what it means is that you understand that not all the responses are going to be appropriate or applicable to what you're trying to bring about. Because, like you said before, so many people react to the cursory information. They read a couple sentences in an article, they hear a newscast, they don't know any of the history. They hear little snippets of news that's been cleansed and gone through and you know, kind of like thinned out. So you never hear the entire story anyway. I mean, I find it amazing when people don't realize that. They hear a 30-second newscast and they think they've heard the whole story, and they start making opinions about this particular person or about this situation, and they don't even have anywhere near any of the facts. They may know 4% of what went on.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, you know, I learned that when I was very young, young compared to what I am now. When our house caught fire and burnt down, I was quoted many, many times. People interviewed me, and everything you say is edited by whoever is putting the print in the paper. Everything you say is edited by the reporter that took it down. Everything you say is edited by her or his boss. So at the end of the day, I would read the paper, and like if I used a specific adjective, I remember using the word amazing, and I was talking about the people that were in my life. And they took amazing out and put it in another part of the paragraph and change the whole essence of what I said. And, I mean, it wasn't bad. It didn't, you know, it didn't make me or break me. But it annoyed me because I thought to myself, that's not what I was trying to say. That's not what I was trying to get across. So I was very careful
That. But you just said now, you've been in the paper a couple of times at that time, and then when what happened to Mikey happened. Okay, I was in the paper only twice when I had the ferret rescue. Two different news agencies came out here and did interviews with me. All right, and in both interviews, they misquoted me. All right, mm-hmm. So here I've only been involved with the news media twice on a personal level, and both times they misquoted me. So that tells you something. And the second article had six substantial mistakes where they actually said that I advocated certain ways of taking care of ferrets that actually was not true, and it was I advocated not to do these things. I was so irate over that article. And I called like six different people the paper. I could not get them to retract the story or even print a correction. And here this thing is out there forever, and there wasn't anything I could do about it because I couldn't get anybody to fix it. I couldn't get anybody to say they misquoted me. And now here this ferret expert is out there telling people to do things to ferrets that are harmful. So think about that. You and me, we've only been out there a couple times, and almost 100% of our experience is being misquoted. So what do you think is happening with everybody else?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm. That's not true of me. That is true of the story I just told about. But of course, I was the episode with my son and other stories that were written in Ithaca about the fire. And as the time went on, and all the benefits that people gave for us, it was just that initial one. And that initial one taught me to say, you know, I would like you to record this, not just to write it down. And that helped a lot. That helped a lot. And in my, because I don't necessarily believe or think that somebody did it with any kind of intent. They just were, you know, a lot of times you say things a different way from somebody else because you like it the way it sounds this way better than the way they said it. It's not done with any, it didn't harm me in any way. It just changed what I thought was my thought. Now, with Big Mike, when he got hurt, I was quoted a few times, and we got President Reagan's letter, and they made it National Michael Brewer Day and everything. That's way back in 1983. And then with Mikey, I mean, I did probably, without any exaggeration, 60 to 80 interviews. And and I would say to people, especially if it was from a newspaper, the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, the Miami Herald, I would say, if you misquote me, I won't talk to you again.
Well, good.
And
good.
I just said it just like that, and they looked at me and smiled, and I said, I'm serious. I said, because this is serious. So please don't put words in my mouth, and please don't choose other words for the way I express myself. And they said, okay, Renee, okay. And so it is, but you don't know that the first time out on that block. And and many people, like you just said about yourself, you know, never have that happen in their life so that, you know, they make a lot of comments. There was an interview that Valerie did on a television show. I won't say the name because I don't want to badmouth anybody, but she felt harassed, and indeed she was. And when they called later and wanted to talk to us again, I said, no, I'm not happy with the way she was talked to. She's not happy with the way she was talked to, and we don't need that. We have enough stress going on. Do you not understand what's going on in this family? We sure as hell don't need to fight with somebody because they think they know what's going on, and they don't. And, you know, that is what it is. But, again, now we're getting a little bit off the subject. But it is about morals. It is about not just selling your show or your newspaper or anything like that, just like this show. I mean, you and I talk about a lot of very sensitive subjects. But we leave space for people to make their own decisions, and we say that all the time. This is our opinion. You should have your own opinion. Opinions are sometimes shared to a certain extent, but everybody has their own personal opinion about everything, and it usually has to do with how it affects them personally.
Right, right, right. Well, the one thing that's good about our show is that, number one, you and I don't always agree, so it's good for people to see that two people that are best friends can actually disagree about something, and it doesn't affect the integrity of their friendship, you know? So
right.
that's
right.
An example setting. But on the other hand, when we talk about these things, we try to bring more of the specific information to light, and sometimes I'll back off on a stance, or sometimes you back off on a stance once we hear a little bit more of the other side. But your opinions, reactions to things are always going to be colored by your particular life experience. And when you can be open-minded to understand that your life experience is limited based on the whole world, so you have to remain a little open-minded. That doesn't mean that you don't have any convictions. It doesn't mean that you never, never lock in and say, this is how I feel about something. But it means you always leave room to be educated. You always leave room to find out more information about a situation that may kind of alter a little bit how you're feeling about something, you know.
And absolutely.
Listen.
And
listen,
that's
more than
normal.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But most
yep.
people don't do that.
Very,
that's
very
the problem.
Normal.
Yep.
Well, because I think most people, especially when they get excited, they're pretty sure that their feelings are going to be right on with everybody else. And because it's hard to believe that you could feel so strongly about something and somebody else could have a different opinion. But it very often is true that they do, for the reasons that you just said, because their life has taken them in a different direction, or something has happened in their life that made them feel differently about it. What isn't right is when people just say mean things just for the sake of being mean. What isn't right is for people to make judgment calls that are not an opinion, but slander, or anything along those lines. To assume that you know where somebody else's head is at is a big, big mistake. I wish, just the people I love dearly, I wish that I always knew where their heads were at, because it would make my life a lot simpler. But I don't. I can't. There's no way for me to know that. So let's talk about this. Students, parents, and staff, and community at large. School anti-bullying laws require us to develop an anti-bullying policy, which is true now. Most of your states have made that like a part of the protocol for a school curriculum. We are hereby presenting our anti-bullying policy that is based on the Golden Rule. We have chosen the Golden Rule as our guide because it is a universally recognized formula for moral, harmonious society. Any policy that violates the Golden Rule is by definition immoral and can only result in more harm than good. Amen. The Golden Rule instructs us to treat others the way we would like to be treated, to refrain from doing to others what we would not have them do to us, and to love our fellow human beings, including those we label bullies. So just in that little section of this is, we probably won't get this done today because this is kind of a large chapter, but it really sums things up very nicely, and it is about everything that we talk about on this show. Even if you don't want to use the title The Golden Rule, if you don't get that, don't believe in it, whatever has happened in your life that it makes it seem like, you know, nobody lives by the Golden Rule, or that's ridiculous, you can't get everybody to be that way. Well, you probably can't. But if you have a million people, if 100,000 of them do this, the world will be a better place. It can't help but be. But the problem with the anti-bullying policies that have been set in place now anti-bullying laws require our school to guarantee that all children can attend without fear of being bullied by other children. That's an impossible promise to make. These laws also empower parents to sue us for failing to this mission. That's another big mistake. We are being mandated to protect children from all unwelcome behaviors such as verbal insults, especially insults based on race, religion, gender, and sexual orientation, demeaning gestures, aggressive physical actions, social exclusion, rumors, and degrading posts in cyberspace. We regret to inform you that we cannot offer you such a guarantee. The Golden Rule instructs us not to do to you what we wouldn't want others doing to us. We would not want anyone to give us false hope by making guarantees that are impossible to fulfill. For this would inevitably cause us disappointment and pain. Likewise, we will not give you any false hopes by guaranteeing your children a bully-free environment. We do not create the children who attend. We do not screen for potential bully or victim proneness. We cannot deny admission to children who have such potential. And we do not magically acquire control over children's biological drives, emotions, behavior, personalities, intelligence, and the social lives once they become our students. Thus, we cannot create a place in which people are always nice to each other. We have heard of only one place like that, and it's called heaven. Research has shown that the world's most revered anti-bullying programs have a dismal, dismal track record.
Yeah.
They rarely result in more than a minor reduction in bullying and often cause an intensification of the problem. How can we offer you a bully-free school when the programs we are required to use don't work? Furthermore, despite the widespread concern about bullying among kids in school, statistics have shown that schools are the safest place for children. Isn't that ironic? But that's true. You know, I've read that a lot of times.
Yep.
There is more bullying going on among adults in the workplace. The most frequent and serious bullying of all takes place within the home. The divorce rate is about 50%, and in most families, the kids fight on a daily basis despite all the attempts of the parents to make them stop. If you can figure out how to make your home free from bullying, please let us know how you did it, and we promise to adopt the same strategy in our school. Schools throughout the world are currently experiencing a historically unprecedented level of tension and hostility as a result of the anti-bullying laws. When the school administration gets involved investigating, interrogating, judging, and punishing children for the way they treat each other, hostilities among students, parents, and school staff escalates. At least one set of parents ends up feeling the administration was unfair to their child in this process, and then they get angry with the administration, complain to the school district, and may hire lawyers to sue the school or the district. Rather than bringing peace to schools, anti-bullying laws are resulting in increased hostility. An anti-bully law is a catch-22. Because the very attempt to enforce the law creates an intensification of the bullying problem. Both the American Psychological Association and the National Association of School Psychologists have issued research-based position papers advising against zero-tolerance school policies for aggression, explaining the myriad of ways in which they cause more harm than good. If zero tolerance is counterproductive for aggression, how can it be productive for bullying? Now,
read that last line.
If zero tolerance is counterproductive for aggression, how can it be productive for bullying?
Oh, perfect. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm. So that whole, that several paragraphs, that's like a page and a half that he just put in, for, you know, the reason why the anti-bullying policies are not working, because you're meeting aggression with aggression. because you're stopping bullying with being bigger and bullying harder is the essence of everything he just said. In order for me to be the boss in this house, I have to exercise my authority as the matriarch. I can't just walk in and say, you know, that's not nice for you to talk to your brother that way. I wish you really wouldn't do that. No, I use my authority as the matriarch in this family. I know that I do that. I know that I do that. So in essence, in my family, because we do love each other and because we do have a close family despite other problems that happen to all of us on a daily basis, there's a forgiveness because Graham came in and yelled at us, and it's Graham. So we go with it. But when you're talking about a school situation where you don't feel that way about the principal, yes, he's the boss in the school. And, of course, he has other bosses that he has to meet with. The only other boss that I have to meet with in my home is my maker. I don't, you know, nobody, even my husband, has never tried to override my decisions about anything. So in the closed confines of my home, I can do that. But you can't do that when you're in the public. You can't do that even in the workplace, even when you're the owner of a company. Why? Because people say, take this job and shove it and walk out the door if they don't like what you say to them, right? I mean, that they have that right to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there has to be rules and regulations, but there can't be,
right?
There can't be rules and regulations based on how am I going to put this? In other words, when you say something like making it illegal to be unkind, it's goofy. I mean, you can't control every single aspect of human behavior. You have to make things that are criminal, and make things that are unkind, so what? You know, I mean, people have to stop blowing things out of proportion, okay? If somebody walks up and they smack you across the face, you know what? That's a crime. You've just been assaulted. That's not being unkind. That's a criminal act. So there have to be laws to prevent physical harm, somebody walking up and harming you, slandering you in words, in print, where it can put you out of business because they said something, a lie about you. You have a restaurant and they said that you have code violations and it's a lie. All right, these are actionable items because it's causing you harm. It's causing you financial harm. It's causing you physical harm. But if somebody just walks up to you and they're mean to you, people have to start, you know, getting thicker skinned and not reacting to every unkindness that's done to them. If you're not really injured, then don't go into a victim complex and make it out that you're injured and then expect law enforcement to create laws to protect you against unkindnesses. And that's a huge part of the problem with our society today, is that everybody expects to not ever have anybody be unkind to them. And we shouldn't be unkind to each other, but it shouldn't be criminalized, because some of the sweetest, kindest people in the world are unkind to you because they're just having a bad day. And
yeah.
So that's why we have to be a little bit thicker skinned and more compassionate in those type of situations, when it's not a real crime, when we haven't really been injured. Then don't go there, because society is being diminished by this pervasive victim complex, and that's being bolstered by a lot of these laws that are being created.
Well, I think that's all absolutely true, that is the basis of what Izzy is talking about as well, is our inability to see past you know, some foolish off-the-cuff comment that somebody said, you know, the old saying, you know, you open your mouth and let anything fall out. You need to think about it before you do that, or carefully insert your foot in your mouth, or all those kind of sayings, because people say things without thinking all the time. And my infamous story about my sister saying that to me, about, you know, you think about everything you say, oh my God, I don't have time to do that. So there is the fact that we understand that. There is the fact that we know that we shouldn't just say whatever we want to say. You walk up to your best friend in school one day and she's, you know, she's pretty skinny and she's got on all black and what we used to call pegged pants. Now I guess they just call them skinny pants. Skinny pants and a black shirt and everything. And you want to look at her and say, what the hell were you thinking? You look like the Night of the Walking Dead. That's what you want to say to her. But you don't say that to her because you love her, right? So you just say, you know, that's really makes you look really thin, you know. That's the outfit I should be wearing, and you should be wearing this, pansy dress I have on. There's other things that you can say to somebody that isn't so hurtful or demeaning or makes you look like you're smarter than they are. That's another thing that hurts a lot of people is if you say something to them that makes them feel like you're lording it over them because you would have made a wiser decision about something than they did. That's not our right either. And as a mom and a grandma and a great-grandma, I do that a lot. And I catch myself thinking to myself, you know what, maybe they're, you know, every now and then, Miley, she's only 5. She says things to me and I think to myself, why didn't I think of that? You know, I mean, because she keeps things so simple, and she just says it to me, and I'm like, she makes me giggle all the time because things to her are just what they are, just like AJ, you know. So you are losing out on a lot of stuff, too, if you think that you're the only one with any answers. You lose out a lot of input. You lose out on a lot of things that you don't think of because you're just not in that place. So let's say if we talked at a school, Shelley, what would you say to the principal of the school, not the kids? What would you say to a principal to get him to understand that intervening in a principal way just scares the kids, makes them want to avoid the principal, makes them want to get even with whoever tattled on him, all the things that Izzy tells us about? What would you say to that principal to get him to understand that there's other ways to handle it?
I would try to take Izzy's approach. I would explain to him that, you know, that all the different tactics that schools are using are not working, and it's shown that it's not working because bullying activity flipping into criminal activity is on the rise. And so something, we can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So obviously schools need to be able to step back a little bit and reevaluate their policies. All right. And one of the policy changes is to change how we look at bullying and not describe everything as bullying. In other words, if somebody's been touched physically, now you're getting into criminal activity. There has to be a set of standards of how to respond to that. And if it is just straightforward bullying, you've got to counsel both kids. You can't just counsel the victim or the person that was bullied, because now you are creating more of a victim complex in them because you're not showing them how to take care of the situation on their own. You're actually demonstrating that without another person standing in for them, they can't stand up for themselves. And you're further angering the bully because you're not dealing with why they went there to begin with. These are children. A child is not going to bully another child unless there's something wrong. They're being bullied. They're unhappy. They've got a poor diet, whatever the reason is. It could be hundreds of different reasons why a child bullies another child. But without finding out why, you're just creating more anger in that. You're creating a time bomb in the bully if you just punish them without trying to address why they went there to begin with. And you're further solidifying that victim is going to grow into an adult victim and just perpetuate that cycle if you step in for them. So that's kind of where I would go.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like one of the things you said that is almost one of the most important statements we can make, and that is the fact that if you have a very aggressive kid, not an adult, adults by this time should be able to handle what's going on in their life and not have it manifest into all their actions and interactions during the course of a day. But a kid that's acting out like that, you're right. Somebody needs to find out what's going on with that kid. And that's something that's overlooked a lot. So I like that you thought of that, because that, for me, is very important. And Izzy talks about that. Remember the time we talked about, I told a story and he said, would it surprise you to know that the person you're calling bully thinks he's being bullied or she's being bullied? And I thought about it for a minute and I said, no, I guess not. And he said, so it's almost got like a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. And like what we just read, the biggest scene of the crime for bullying is home. So if you got a kid that comes into school first thing in the morning and is aggressive and mean and is saying mean things to everybody and upsetting a myriad of other people because of what just happened to him, that's that snowball effect. So I like that you are thinking about talking to a principal and saying, you know, what do you do with the aggressor? What do you do with the kid that came in the bad mood and put everybody else in the class in a bad mood because of his or her behavior? Why don't we, instead of thinking of it as the reprimands and the punishments and the, you know, you can't do that and stuff like that, then you put that child in a place of nobody does that for me at home, you know. I spilled my milk at the breakfast table this morning, and my father hit me with the back of his hand up the side of my head. I didn't mean to spill my stupid milk.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, that's just a simple scenario which happens in every home in the world probably a million times a day. So if I like that, and I kind of think to myself, we haven't touched on that enough. We talked about it, and Izzy talks about it, but that actually, to be able to stop a snowball, you know, from getting bigger and bigger, you have to stop the snowball, right? You have to stop it from sliding
really
down the hill.
It's really, really important. The other part of it is, like I said, counseling the bully, because there's a reason why they're bullying. Kids aren't bad for no reason. There's something making them act that way. It could, like I said, it could even be as simple as a bad diet and they're just always agitated, or it could be that they're being smacked at home and then they have no way of releasing it, you know. But with the victim, you know, you said something a few minutes ago, you know, about, you know, people not overreacting to unkind things that are said to them. And, you know, I think about my own personal reactions when I became older and people would say mean things to me, and when I was in business and a friend of mine that worked with me would get irate because I wouldn't respond to these people. You know, they would say things to me and I would laugh and I would act like they were joking with me, but seriously, I mean, I'd get goofy, but I would laugh and I would joke back with them like I thought they were teasing me, and they would get so confused. But what would happen is it would turn around and then they would act like they were teasing me and just walk away. And it never went anywhere. And they also didn't try to be mean to me again at a later time. So the only one that got upset was my girlfriend, who thought that I should have taken their heads off. And I had a friend of mine who was a black man. And it's, for people who don't know what I look like, I'm white, but I had a gentleman I was dating for a few years who was black, so obviously that created some prejudices when we would go out. And one time we went to a restaurant, and one of the waitresses made a derogatory comment about the fact that we were a black and a white couple coming in to sit down. Well, I got irate, and my friend was very calm about the whole thing. He said, look, he said, if you're that upset, we'll go to another restaurant. You know, he says, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, you know, because he had been dealing with it his whole life. And he said, it's not worth it. He said, my blood pressure is in check. He says, I'm a happy person. He said, I'm not going to overreact to mean words that people say to me. He said, because that's their baggage, not mine. And he would not get angry. And as it turned out, you know, we ended up staying there, and the manager came over and got us a different waitress, you know. But it's the point that I've seen it happen for me outward. I was very angry and incensed on behalf of my friend, and yet he stayed cool and calm. And my girlfriend was incensed on my behalf, but I stayed cool and calm. And I got through my situation very happy, and so did my friend. So it is a choice, all right? It really is a choice whether or not we're going to let what somebody says to us diminish us or make us angry or make us sad. And if you choose not to go there and just have a little bit higher level of confidence and compassion, you won't go into these victim modes, and you can actually protect yourself more.
Well, one of the things, again, for everybody out there who doesn't know Shelley personally, one of Shelley's major assets that I learned about her very, very early on is that, as a rule, she doesn't hang on to things. She's very forgiving, and she just, you know, she lets things go. She's not one, she may not let it go way deep down inside, but as far as the rest of the world knows, she's done with it. And that's a major gift to be able to do that. That's a major, major gift, because every time you take in poison and it stays in you, it makes you sick. So if you can let go of things, like I said, I know of things that, you know, that have happened to Shell in the years that I've known her, and I've worried that it was going to really hurt her, and I think it did in the beginning, but then she lets go of it. And that's a major gift, and I've seen her do that time and time again and forgive people that really didn't deserve her friendship for various reasons, but they got it anyway. And did that make any difference to them? I don't know, but it made Shelley happier, made Shelley better, made Shelley a better person, period. So yep, that's important to remember, to not, when people say that to me, like the boys and stuff like that, that hurt Mikey and everything, don't you know, how do you feel, do you think about it? And I said, no, I don't give that any energy at all. Not because
exactly.
I couldn't. If I wanted to, of course I could conjure up some real, you know, anger and hatred. But why? It doesn't hurt them if that's going on in me. It hurts me.
Well, like I had seen this one rape victim on a talk show once, and she had been brutally raped. I mean, brutally raped and mutilated. He scarred her face up, and she survived. And she was one of the sweetest, happiest women. She saw herself as a survivor, not as a victim. She was married. She had children. And, you know, so it's... you know, so it was something that was incredible to see how, what a good attitude she had about life. And the interviewer was actually confused. And he said, you seem to have such an incredible attitude about life. He says, he says, I'm sorry to go here, but he said, how do you feel about, and he said the name of the man who raped her. And she says, I've prayed for him. She says, I've forgiven him. She says, he must have an absolutely horrible life to be able to do something, you know, so violent to somebody. So she says, I feel sorry for him. She says, he's lost his liberty. You know, he was in jail for the rest of his life. And she mm-hmm. says, I feel sorry for him. And she says, and I feel nothing but compassion for him. She says, if I felt anything other than that, she says, then he would be violating me every day that I held on to that. She says, I've let
That's
it go.
Right.
He said, it's not serving me to not let it go. And I was so, it was one of the first times I had ever heard that. This is going back maybe about 15, 20, because I was still in New York at the time, so that's about 20 years ago. And I was so impressed with that interview because I'd never heard that concept of just letting go of something because it continues hurting you. It's not hurting him. If she, if every time she thinks about him, she gets enraged and gets fearful again, it's not hurting him, it's hurting her. So she says, I had to let it go. She said, it didn't do me any good. And that's why she was able to open up and meet another man and get married, and she had two beautiful kids. So, you know, but how many rape victims don't let it go and their lives are ruined? So it means they're actually being raped again every day. They're just being re-victimized by their own by their own holding on to of whatever event mm-hmm. happened to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that a big part of forgiveness is also forgiving yourself for forgiving, because a lot of people will talk to you and say, you know, you shouldn't have anything to do with them. You shouldn't do this. You should, how can you, especially husbands and wives. I hear people giving that advice all the time. I don't know why you tolerate that. I don't know why you do this. And I think to myself, you know, how can you say that to somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
You really can't say that to somebody else because you really don't know what's going on inside them. So I want to talk, we only have about 10 minutes left. I want to just cover this this next paragraph because I think it says more of what we're saying right now. The need to think rationally. Our country has been making irrational decisions regarding bullying because we panicked. And when people panic, logic goes down the drain. That's what we're both just saying right now. We panicked about Columbine and in a knee-jerk manner declared war against bullies, adopting zero-tolerance policies that abandon well-established psychological and moral principles. More recently, we've been panicking about child suicides committed by victims of bullying and our intensifying policies that can't work. Well, and that is scary. That is scary. And I get why we try to find the solution pronto. I get that. Because the death of a child taking their own life is like, I mean, I can't even think of anything worse than that. To solve problems, we need to think rationally. Therefore, as an alternative to the hysteria-driven, counterproductive, anti-bullying policies that schools are being forced to uphold, we are offering a rational, moral policy based on the Golden Rule and psychological understanding of human nature. We anticipate that many of you, especially parents, will object to this policy because you would like to see the Dickens punished out of your kids' bullies. But we guarantee that this policy is to your benefit as well. What good is a policy that will fail to solve your children's problems while increasing hostility towards you and your children? And in your zeal to see bullies punished, you may be failing to consider the possibility that the school is as likely to determine that your child is a bully and not a victim. This said, we are happy to inform you that our school is indeed determined to do all in its power to make your children free from bullying. We will attempt to do it by rationally applying time-honored moral and psychological principles. Anti-bullying laws are requiring schools to function as a maximum security correctional facility, which is so
true.
Yep. They strip away the freedom of children to behave according to their natural inclinations and require them to act like saints. No violations will be tolerated. They oblige educators to do double duty as security guards who monitor each and every inch of the school territory in order to protect children from each other. To be detectives who investigate every complaint of bullying and to be judges and punishers. They compel students to assist the staff in this effort by attempting to determine who are the victims and bullies, to stand up for victims against bullies once they have made this determination, and to inform on the bullies to the school authorities, or they, too, will be punished as accessories to the crime. Finally, they hold the schools accountable for successful implementation of the correctional facility role, or it, too, will be punished and possibly sued. Research and experience have shown that the correctional facility approach to bullying does not work and causes more harm than good. Our school rejects the role of correctional facility. We believe that parents, too, do not want their children to be educated in a prison-like atmosphere. We declare our school to be an educational establishment. Our purpose is to empower children, to meet the challenges of life, not to protect them from those challenges. They will be encountering meanness throughout their life, and most of the meanness will be in their own homes. While it is not humanly possible to prevent all mean behavior among our students, we will do our best to equip them with the wisdom to handle mean behavior without needing the help of others. If we can teach them how to do this when they are children, we will be helping them for a lifetime. However, just as we cannot guarantee that our students will acquire academic mastery, we cannot guarantee they will acquire wisdom either. We educators, too, are often lacking in wisdom despite our age and education. We will do our best to monitor the school grounds and prevent students from injuring each other, though we cannot always succeed, much as we would like to. Developmental psychologists recognize that for children to be happy and to develop resilience, confidence, and social skills, they need the opportunity to interact with each other with adults constantly hovering over them and monitoring all of their interactions. We would not tolerate such interference in our adult lives, and children shouldn't be subjected to it either. We will do our best to teach students to solve their interpersonal problems on their own, rather than to inform on each other to the school authorities. For doing so almost always causes them to hate each other and seek revenge. We will only instruct students to inform the school authorities either because they would like us to teach them how to solve their problems or because they need us to handle situations in which there has been physical harm to bodies or property or to prevent such harm. So this whole last few paragraphs kind of sums up what he's talking about when he talks about responsibility, morality, rational thought. Let me ask you, Shel, we've only got a few minutes left, but I want to do a quick little test for both of us. If you're really angry about something, really, really, really mad, I don't know what that would incite, how that would incite you or what would incite you to that point. But if you were like that, do you think dealing with the situation while you were in that frame of mind, do you think that would be beneficial? Do you think you would make wise decisions? Do you think that you would be shooting from your brain or from your anger?
No, any time that you're angry or incensed by something, you're not thinking rationally because that emotion in itself is befuddling. Anytime, I don't really go there anymore, but you know, like when you first met me, that I did have anger issues, 10, 15 years ago, they were pretty deep-seated, and I used to give in to the anger more often than I should have. So although I don't go there anymore now, I remember when I used to, and I remember that I did not think rationally. Sometimes if I made a decision while I was still angry, before allowing myself to calm down, I usually regretted what I said or what I did. So that's kind of in a nutshell, without expounding on it at all, that's kind of my reaction, is that I don't think you can make sound decisions while you're still in that state of anger or frustration towards another person. I think you have to let yourself calm down before you make decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think if I were to give anybody any real words of wisdom, they're not from me. They were my maternal grandfather. Ran greenhouses. And I remember my mom and my grandma telling me that when he was a young man, if he got mad at one of my uncles, not so much my mom and her sister, but one of my uncles were little demons, I guess, when they were young. And he would go in the greenhouse and work with the plants before he addressed the problem with the boys. He would send them to their room. He would calm himself down in the greenhouse, and then he would, because he thought he had a very bad temper. and he was always afraid that he would do something that he couldn't forgive himself for later. Now, that was many, many years ago, and I remember my mother telling me that story, and it made sense to me when I was seven, and it still makes sense to me today. So I do think calming yourself down, putting yourself in a good place is the best way to deal with anything that makes you that angry. But we're out of time. I want to invite everybody back tomorrow morning. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about tomorrow because I have like three things here, but we will discuss it. It is the Friendly Witch Doctor Show, so I hope you'll join us. Everybody go out there and have a great day. God bless, and thanks. See you soon. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Reen. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Talk to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.